Welcome to the program for Friday, June 29th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Federal News Countdown with the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by experts in the world of the federal government. And this week, my experts include my friend and colleague Julia Ziegler from Federal News Radio. She runs federalnewsradio.com, and it's great to see you again on the countdown. Nice to have you on the show. Josh Soslack of Clio Strategies is back, and also a senior fellow at the Telework Exchange.
Exactly.
And you write for Huffington Post as well.
So. I do. It's just exciting to be here, and I love being on the show.
Well, I love having you, and you're carving time out of that busy schedule. I'm grateful that you're able to do it. Glad to have you. We have the stories that we're going to count down posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we start with...
Number three!
The third most important federal news story of the week, according to Josh Soslack, is this ongoing saga about CNN and Fox screwing up the healthcare release yesterday. CNN and Fox News both having to put out corrections about this. They said initially that the Supreme Court had struck down the individual mandate. Obviously, we know now that's not true. Why is this significant to people who work for the federal government, Josh?
Well, Francis, I picked this story because we've been drinking from the social media fire hose for about 3 years now. And the Obama administration is the first administration to really embrace both transparency and social media. But the problem with raw transparency is that it can lead to misinformation. My dad was a journalist for 40 years, and he worked for the wire service. And he said the motto was, be first, but be right first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big issue. I think we've really got to step back and consider if instant news is always kind of the best approach. And I'm going to say this right here in the wolf's den, and make a little shameless plug for newspapers.
Remember, you're on a media right now.
Yeah. But you invited me as a guest, and you pay the price.
That's
when
true.
I
get what I pay for.
This is the great – yeah, exactly. But when we talk about really thinking about what happened, and you and I were talking earlier about SCOTUS blog guy who there was a story in the Post the other day about how he really wanted to be first.
Mm-hmm.
And what he posted was, hey, this is complicated. We're looking at it right now. We'll get to you as soon as we know what it means. And that was the right approach.
Yeah. The issue, though, that I think we've gotten away from, and again, I'm with you on this 100%, is these organizations are racing each other to provide information, to provide content. And I'm not sure that we think about information anymore as factual information and presenting it as such. I think they feel that they need to get the content out there as quick as they can.
Yeah, it's not the book, it's not the book about the royal family. I mean, it's not, we talk about these are really important things. And whichever side of the healthcare debate you're on, this was a momentous and really important thing. And yeah, if you got it wrong for 5 minutes, it didn't change your life. But I think it cheapens the idea of communicating government information when we're not credible, when we're not right. And, if you ruin the brand of the federal government, then you've got a real problem. I think CNN and Fox are figuring that out right now.
Josh Soslack's third most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. It's Eric Wemple's blog on CNN and Fox screwing up the healthcare ruling information release yesterday. Julia, your third most important story is Mike O'Connell's story, headline, Bill Aims to Reform Senior Executive Service. It's posted on federalnewsradio.com. The SES has been this point of contention, not heartburn exactly, but people have been trying to figure out what to do to not straighten it out, but just improve it for a long time now. And this is another attempt at that.
It is. And I think, this story is really important because I think exactly what you just said, there are a lot of sides to this story and there are a lot of people who have a lot to say about it. I was at an event recently where someone came to me and they were concerned about the Stock Act and what that meant for the senior executive service. And one of the things that they brought up was that, they're concerned that in one of these potential pieces of legislation, there was word about Feds having to move around, right? Not staying in the same agency, getting out, the fact that that's why the SES was set up and that really hasn't been happening, recently. And he said, what concerns me about that is I am a specialist. I, you know, work for an agency where there's not a lot of people who do what I do. I can't just go to another agency and do the same thing there. So that's one concern. Of course, there are other concerns as well. And I think Josh and I were talking about this a little bit before we started, concerns about pay, about how much SESers make. But this bill specifically, I think, is important because it does address some of the issues that SESers have. For example, it would increase pay for SESers who receive a certain performance rating. It promotes diversity. It strengthens some of these candidate development programs they have through mentoring and things like that. So bringing people up through the ranks, how do we get these people to even be ready at the place where they could become an SESer? And allowing people to apply for senior executive positions with a resume and a cover letter instead of one of, you know, those forms that they have to fill out now, which is very, very cumbersome. So I think that this will be a good start. Is it the end all be all? Are there other things that that might need to be added in? I'm sure there are. Again, there are lots of different people who have lots of opinions on this.
One of the people that is will be affected by this potentially, I spoke to recently also and raised the same issue that you were just talking about, the idea of moving around. Mm-hmm. And this person said, that sounds like the military. That's not what we signed up for. We didn't sign up to be guaranteed to move around. Now, if you go and you read the fine print about right. the senior executive service, it's in there.
It is.
But
yeah.
the government, I don't think, is effectively informing people when they bring them into the SES about what they're doing. This is, I don't normally show this much leg, but this is Josh's second most important story, and we'll talk about this more when we continue on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Julia Ziegler's third most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. Bill aims to reform senior executive service. You can read it now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and the federal news countdown continues in a moment.
This is a transformative time for the Department of Defense. The military is progressing toward a smaller, nimbler force capable of rapidly responding to any threat around the globe. Secure, next-generation communications capabilities are essential, ensuring personnel can get the information they need from virtually any location, anytime, on any compatible device. Microsoft offers today's military leaders the next wave of technologies, providing advanced security features without compromising productivity and mission effectiveness, all at a price that makes sense. From the front lines to the command center to the Pentagon, Microsoft and its global partner network are working with defense leaders to create solutions that not only meet but anticipate today's service member needs. Whether it's providing secure online collaboration and editing capabilities or voice and video through unified communications, Microsoft is equipping warriors in motion with the familiar technology they use every day to get the job done. That's real impact for tomorrow's military. Learn more about defense IT solutions at Microsoft.com/DOD.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by MetLife and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Here's Dr. Ross Fletcher, Chief of Staff at the Washington, D.C. VA Medical Center, on the Gateway to Veterans Health and Wellness panel.
The combination, the team of the doctor, nurse, and patient is being greatly enhanced by the transparency of My Healthy Vet. And the more we can give the patient, the more transparent that is, the more power we get along those lines. They're all part of the team, and they actually teach themselves how to take care of themselves.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
My Health eVet, VA's personal health record, helps veteran patients actively participate in their health and well-being. If you're a VA patient, consider upgrading your account today at myhealth.va.gov. With an upgraded account, veterans can securely access personal health records online 24/7. An upgraded account offers secure messaging, which strengthens the partnership between veterans and your healthcare team. To learn more, visit myhealth.va.gov. That's myhealth.va.gov. Take control of your VA healthcare.
Some lawmakers want top career feds to earn more money. I'm Emily Kopp. Coming up on Monday's Federal Drive, Virginia Congressman Jim Moran tells us his plan to boost the senior executive service. Barclay Butler joins us, too. He is the new director of a critical health IT project for service members and vets. Lots more, too, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown each week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. This week it's my colleague Julia Ziegler from federalnewsradio.com and Josh Soslack of Clio Strategies, and we are up to
number two.
And Josh, as I mentioned, your second most important federal news story of the week is another take on the SES story that Julie had at number three. Yours is from the Washington Post. It's Timothy Smith's story, headlined Congressman Moran to Propose SES Reform. Now, we started this conversation, obviously, in the last segment, continued it during the break. But one of the things that I mentioned is I think what the government has done a poor job of doing is setting expectations for people who are going into the senior executive service. This idea that you're going to get moved around is inherent in the original legislation that codified the SES, but people don't hear it for whatever reason when they join the service. And so when legislation like this reform bill comes out that says this might happen, people say, hey, that sounds like the military, and that's not what I signed up for.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, it's interesting when you look at this issue of technical expertise, and Julia mentioned it in her piece, that if you're a technical expert, really, you shouldn't actually be in the SES. There's something called SL, which is set up to be an SES level for technical experts. And SES is supposed to be general management. Now, as far as moving people around, you know, DOD has done this, and they've been pretty effective at it. And they've kept their folks from going native by doing that. And that's, I think, one of the big things is they keep people fresh and they get some new blood in there. It's actually become a lot more difficult for them because times have changed. And I think, you know, when they started this, dad worked, mom stayed at home. And, you know, when it was time 3 years and it was time to what they call PCS, permanent change of station, DOD bought your house and you went and lived in a new house. So now mom and dad both work. Your house is underwater and, you know, your kids are in school and you really don't want to move.
Well, and in that scenario that you're painting, in the old model, you had somebody working and somebody able to stay on the home front and manage all of that moving, which is more than a full-time job in and of itself. In the new scenario that you paint, the two folks, the two leaders of the home, if there are two, have full-time jobs and then try to take on the management of the transition at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a lot more difficult to do even if you're DOD. I think the expectation piece is important. But I think what's really interesting in this is that the bill, while it has a lot of really good things in it, and I agree with Julia that I think that getting into some of the training issues and dealing with some of those issues right off the bat is important. But the one thing that really bothers me about this bill is I think they get it wrong on the money. And the idea that if we pay SESers more money, we're going to get better people. There's a bunch of research out there. Gallup did it about 20 years ago, Marcus Buckingham and that crew. And they basically said, guess what? Bad people like money just as much as good people. And paying people more doesn't, it's not the differentiator.
Well, and then the flip side of that is all the Partnership for Public Service research that indicates that people don't stay because of the pay. They stay because of the leaders that are above them.
And they stay because they get the opportunity to do the things. If you look at what's called the Q12 survey that a lot of government agencies do, it's run by Gallup, and it looks at those 12 things that people really want in a job. And, you know, when we're talking about moving people from the private sector – This idea of whether we're paying them $150,000 or $170,000 or $190,000, guess what? The guys and gals that we want from the private sector are making somewhere between 2 and 10 times that amount. We don't want the folks from the private sector who are necessarily making $200K. We want the ones who are making $1.2 million. They're the really people that we would love to have in government, where it would be wonderful to get that kind of creativity, and they'll do it if you give them the opportunity to be successful. Nobody's going to come in and walk away from $1 million a year to be unsuccessful. They're going to do it because it's an honor to serve, and they don't need the money, at least for a short period of time. They figured out how to do that. And they really just want to be successful. They want to get something done. We've got to help them get stuff done, and the best way to do that is to allow people in government to take risk. We don't do that well. We're really bad at it, and risk means failure. And we're going to have to accept some failure to get creativity and innovation.
When I look across the landscape of the CXO suites across government, and I use that handy little database that the Asbury Park Press put together not too long ago, you can look up anybody who was in government in 2011. You can look up what they made then, Julia. And I compare that with something that I saw. I believe it was on CIO Magazine's website, and I can't find it right off the top of my head. But they went through, they had a slide deck that showed 20 highly paid CIOs. It wasn't the highest, but 20 of the highest paid CIOs in the private sector. And I think the lowest number was like $750,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And these are people who are leading organizations far smaller than some of the organizations in the federal government. So that just kind of goes directly to the point in both of these pieces, your piece from federalnewsradio.com and this Post piece that Josh has. I mean, the money's not the issue. And so some of these other inequities that are potentially in this bill maybe should be where we're focusing.
Yeah, and I just want to go back to something that Josh said real quick. I really do agree with you on the issue of taking some chances and taking risks. I think that's something that in the private sector here at Federal News Radio, you know, we do these things very well. One of the things, you know, we say is, you know, you throw some things up against the wall, you see what sticks. I think in government, too often, people are afraid that when some of those things don't stick to the wall, they're going to get in trouble for the mess they have to clean up on the floor. And I think that's a problem. You know, you really do I think some of our best successes come out of seeing what our failures were. And so I think the government does need to make that change.
Yeah, and one thing that you don't have if you're a CIO in the private sector is if there's a problem or a mistake in your organization, accountability doesn't just mean the boss or two levels above you. It means a hearing in Congress. And Josh, you know how miserable that can be.
Yeah, it's the gotcha mentality of, I think, you know, the IGs and the Hill are making people circle the wagons. And then we get the same thing we got last time because that's the safe way to go. Not because these people that are doing these jobs aren't creative or innovative, but because we've told them, if you mess up once, we will crucify you. And nobody wants that. I think you have to take the risks, and I'm proud that you guys take risks, and you've invited me back on the show a couple of times. That's a huge risk.
So. My finger is right next to the dump button. I'm ready just in case. Josh Soslak's second most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is Congressman James Moran to propose SES reform. You can find that linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The Federal News Countdown continues in a moment with Julia Ziegler's second most important federal news story of the week on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Raja Vagala, acting associate CIO for planning and management at U.S. Treasury, commented during Protecting and Securing Your Data in a Virtual World.
In the federal government, we have the exact opposite. We have a lot of policies in place where email must last forever. We have to find a way to access it, and regardless of how many years later on the FOIA request or the request in the legislative branch may come in. So the way people talk about email in the cloud, for the federal government, we have to break that down into our definition of email is archiving, network management, and it is the email service.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword virtual.
The right virtualization strategy can take you from static infrastructure silos to an automated high-density cloud that transforms IT service delivery. And the path goes straight through business-critical virtualization. Symantec has the backup, recovery, and security solutions you need to protect your virtualized environment with confidence.
For the top 10 tips on protecting a virtualized environment, visit www.virtualbackupplan.com. Symantec, confidence in a connected world.
My fondest dream is becoming an astronaut.
3, 2, 1, and liftoff.
EADS and its Astrium subsidiary are proud to be on ATK's Liberty Commercial Space Transportation Team. Liberty is the safest system to transport crew and cargo to the International Space Station and low Earth orbit.
I will see space and planets. Inside, I will feel happy and excited.
EADS and Astrium, a proud member of ATK's Liberty Team.
Reusing government personal property can save taxpayers millions of dollars. It's also a requirement that federal agencies acquire excess personal property first before purchasing new items. If you're wondering how to acquire excess personal property or transfer your agency's excess personal property, turn to GSA at gsa.gov/reusecmp. GSA offers programs and online tools such as GSA Access to help reuse and recycle items ranging from office equipment and furniture to computers, scientific devices, heavy machinery, airplanes, boats, and much more. Let GSA help you get the most out of the government's resources while saving money and protecting the environment. Remember, when you no longer need it, someone else does. For more information on reusing and recycling your excess personal property, visit GSA at gsa.gov/reusecmp. gsa.gov/reusecmp. That's gsa.gov/reusecmp.
Are you a rising government leader? Do you want to inspire and recharge? Well, then the next generation of government training summit is for you. The OPM-approved training event is brought to you by GovLoop and Young Government Leaders. The two-day summit is designed for and by energetic government leaders. This year's training will be held July 26th and 27th at the JW Marriott here in Washington, D.C. Head over to nextgengov.com. That's nextgengovt.com.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to the Federal News Countdown every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour. Two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the three most important federal news stories of the week. And we count them down from number 3 to number 1. The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by my colleague at Federal News Radio, Julia Ziegler, is Jolie Lee's story headlined, Fed Benefits Spared in Highway and Student Loan Deal. And I think this story is interesting, Jules, because this is something that I explore on a regular basis with Mike Causey, which is we talk about this stuff and we talk about this stuff and we talk about this stuff, and people strategize and war game about, well, if this happens, I'll retire. And we get right to the very edge of this almost, and then almost all the time,
nothing happens,
and we're back where we started.
Yeah,
again.
And we've talked about this before. I think I've brought stories on the countdown before where we were talking about all these bills that are out there that could potentially affect feds. However, I've said it before, and I will say it again, I think now, more than ever, these things really do have the possibility, the potential, to actually come true. We've seen this with they did recently put through the legislation that would increase pension contributions for new feds. And we know that the president himself, a Democrat, had proposed pension increases for federal employees as well. Now, he disagrees with Republicans on how much that amount should be. But I think that those things, when you have two different groups of people on opposing sides of the aisle, but they both agree on the issue, just not the amount, I think that's closer than ever to happening. And so I think it is something that people need to think about. Now, the other side of that coin is that there are so many other things going on in Congress right now. And we'll get to that because it happens to be my number one story of the week. Not to, again, give it away.
She makes a good point there, Josh, in regards to the pension increase. But I can't help but think at some point in time one potential solution to this might be creating this new generation or new level of federal benefits package. We have CSRS and FERS, and it seems perfectly logical to me and a reasonable end point when you have one group way on one side and one group way on the other side. Meeting in the middle might be, yeah, new people coming in won't have it nearly as good as the people who are there now. And the only argument against that I've heard is, well, you don't want to be sitting sitting next to the guy who's getting the a benefit package that's a lot better than yours. Well, the perception that SIRS and FERS are not the same has been out there for however long, since the 80s,
yeah,
and doesn't really seem to affect anybody.
We're doing it now. It worked the last time we did it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not – sure, it's not fair, you know – same job, same money. But the reality is we've got to fix the problem. Now, that being said, we've not been able to do this with Social Security. You know, we have the same problem. We need to reform Social Security, and nobody wants to throw down the gauntlet and, you know, mark the endpoint. The reality is we're going to have to do it. We may have to do it on veterans benefits. And these are the third rail of, you know, the political season.
Yeah, you're obviously not running for office anytime soon by staking out those positions. But what you're talking about there gets to the greater problem, which I talked about with my colleague Tom Temin this morning, and that is what we're negotiating on, or what the people on the Hill are negotiating on, is 5 or 6% of 1/3 of the federal budget. It's not the vast majority of where our deficit problems are coming from. And it strikes me, no disrespect to your story or to the way that Jolie wrote it up, Julia, but this isn't the point. The point are these greater issues that, Josh, you're talking about, that there's nobody on the landscape, not one person I can identify that has any authority that's talking about them. The administration's not talking about them. Nobody on either side of Congress or either side of the Hill is talking about it. Governor Romney is not talking about
CBO,
it.
CBO, I'm gonna throw one down here. CBO is actually talking about it. They went to Congress. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office went to Congress and said, if you let sequestration happen, it will totally destroy the American economy. They went on the record and said it. And so I think that they are saying this is an issue you need to deal with, and you can't just let it happen, because that's what happens, you know, in January if they can't figure it out.
But even sequestration is potentially – I'm doing this in my head on the fly, but I'm going to guess based on the last numbers that I saw, sequestration will impact about half of that 1/3 of the discretionary spending. It doesn't have anything to do with the 2/3 of the budget that are entitlements. So again, even that issue doesn't get to the real root of where our money problems are in this country.
But I think that's what feds are saying, and I think that is also why they're so upset as well, because we have a lot of people who comment on stories on federalnewsradio.com that say, why do you keep coming after us? Why do you keep saying, you know, let's go, let's have a pay freeze, let's raise pension contributions, all this, when that's not going to solve the problems. It's not going to solve the fiscal situation in this country. So I think that feds would agree with you on that.
Yeah, and that does make sense. The number, when it comes down to some of these things, is really minuscule compared to what really needs to get done.
Yeah, it's window dressing. And I think the Hill, you know, it's easy to beat up on the feds. They're a very good straw man. It's real easy to beat up on them. It looks good back home in the district. Everybody thinks that feds don't work hard. They're overpaid. The reality is they work very hard. Mm-hmm. They're not overpaid for what they do. They tend to do, you know, high wage jobs.
Well, as we just talked about in the last segment,
yeah,
we have CIOs running organizations bigger than people who are running organizations in the private sector that make 5 to 10 times as much.
Yeah, when we look at the averages, and, you know, USA Today and a whole bunch of people like to talk about these averages. The problem is those averages include the guy or the gal in the window at McDonald's. And the feds don't have that job. We outsourced those jobs years ago. So it's only the white-collar, you know, knowledge worker jobs that are left in the federal government. And if you do the same comparison with those jobs in the private sector, feds are actually underpaid.
A couple of these threads that we've talked about on the show tied together with the conversation that I had with Jeff Neal, who used to be the chief human capital officer at DHS, and Ron Sanders, who used to be the CHCO at the Office of the Director of National Intelligence a week and a half ago, and that's posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But that was one of the points that we got into there, is how do you figure out how to compare pay and total compensation when you don't really have much below a GS-9 anymore. I mean, I can't remember the last time I was on, not that I spend a lot of time on USAJobs.gov, but I can't remember the last time I flipped through there just to see what's available and saw anything that was below a GS-9.
And even if you did, you probably couldn't find it because,
well,
that's another story.
That was Josh Soslak, by the way, that had that editorial comment about the website. But the point is, that issue combined with the leadership issue that we talked about, and that was another big part of the component of that conversation was, how do you develop leaders and how do you decide that maybe Julia has demonstrated the tools of a great leader, but you're a superior technical expert? Why would we not want to promote her and let you continue to be an expert at what you're doing? And this all ties into this pay and benefit structure thing too.
Yeah, we figured that out in the private sector a long time ago. You know, if you've got a great salesperson, don't promote them to be a manager. Let them be a salesperson. Because guess what? They might be a terrible manager. They're still going to be a great salesperson. Just if you need to pay them more as a great salesperson.
Mm-hmm. The second most important federal news story of the week by as selected by Julia Ziegler is Jolie Lee's story from federalnewsradio.com. Headline, Fed Benefits Spared in Highway and Student Loan Deal. And you can read it now, linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We're up to the top of the chart this week. The most important stories from Josh Soslak and Julia Ziegler when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. How do we enhance national competitiveness? What about getting big things done in government? Tune in to the Business of Government magazine next week and find out. Hear from government executives such as Gene Dodaro, Michael Astru, Admiral Robert Papp, Aaron Connaughton, Tish Long, and Steve Kemp next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Accenture, high performance delivered. It's how we help clients take on their most complex challenges. We help manage the world's largest biometric systems to protect U.S. citizens. And we help more than 20,000 U.S. communities better respond to natural disasters. As a partner with both public and private industry knowledge, Accenture brings unique insights to help federal organizations in their efforts to protect citizens at home and abroad. Accenture, high performance delivered. To learn more, visit Accenture.com/federal.
Training. It's vital when optimizing your organization's limited resources. For over 90 years, federal agencies have counted on Graduate School USA to improve performance with mission-focused training. Graduate School USA offers hundreds of courses and customized programs to help your agency develop the workforce you need for present and future challenges. To learn more, visit graduateschool.edu or call 888-744-GRAD. That's 888-744-GRAD.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown, featuring the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week selected by Josh Soslak of Clio Strategies and formerly the General Services Administration, among other spots. And Julia Ziegler, FederalNewsRadio.com guru. What's your official title? I should know it off the top of my head, but I just...
Web and Operations Manager.
Oh, that's right. I should. Yeah, I know. It's pretty impressive, isn't it?
I'm impressed.
It's much better than my title, which is DJ on Duty.
On-air personality?
No, I don't even get that much.
Talent?
No. No. No, you obviously haven't listened to the show very much. The most important federal news stories of the week are what we're covering right now, and we are up to on the countdown.
Number one.
Julia Ziegler, your most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Congress running out of time to pass priority bills. That ticking that you're hearing is not a bomb going off, hopefully. But it may be if some of these things don't get done, we might have a fiscal bomb go off.
I counted it up today.
Okay.
There are 32 working days left in Congress before the end of the fiscal year.
Do we have a ticker now, on federalnewsradio.com
not
yet?
Not yet. We haven't jumped the gun yet. Yeah. If you take out Mondays and Fridays, which we know are slightly questionable.
on Congress's Johnny Carson schedule.
Correct. Then the number of working days goes down to 19.
Whoops.
Before the end of the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things on that to-do list. And the biggest things, of course, are Postal Service reform, cybersecurity legislation that's still out there, all of the appropriations bills that have to be passed so that agencies have funding come October 1. And, of course, we have sequestration that we got to deal with. So there's a lot of things out there to get done in 19 and or 32 days, depending on how you look at it.
Josh, that's an ugly list of stuff that's got to get done in that truncated period of time.
It is. And, you know, I don't think we've actually gotten stuff done on time in, I don't know, forever.
I looked at a list of the number of continuing resolutions since 2001. There has been at least one CR, and I think the lowest number was two CRs every year since 2001.
And what happens is everybody tries to stick their stuff in the DHS bill or the NDAA because, right. Of course, those actually get done. The authorization bills for Homeland and for DOD, mm-hmm. as well as the appropriations. But, you know, you got to do it. And in an election year, it's really tough to get people on the Hill in these, you know, crazy partisan times to agree on anything.
Here is the problem. The list that you just gave us, Jules, there's no deadline for any of those, and there's no accountability. And you say, well, October 1st is the beginning of fiscal 2013. No, you can just do a continuing resolution or multiple continuing resolutions. Sequestration is supposed to take effect January 2nd, 2013. No, not necessarily. We're already hearing conversations about how to get around that. So instead of looking to actually complete something by a time that would be efficacious for everybody who is affected by a piece of legislation, it seems we're looking for patches and fixes and workarounds and not actually accomplishing anything. Anybody want to tell me where I'm wrong?
I wish I could. I'm going to make a prediction here, which is always dangerous, and I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I think they're going to punt on the appropriations bills, mm-hmm. and we're going to see a CR through the election. Everybody's going to wait and see what happens. We're going to see with sequestration, honestly, I think what they're going to do is exempt DHS and DOD and then pretend like they actually did it so they can go home and say, we cut, you know, we allowed this to happen. It was horrible. And the reality is, you know, it'll hurt a few programs, but they're going to cut so much out of it that it's going to be toothless.
Well, and the administration's already said the VA won't be affected by it.
Right.
Because of the way that it would impact commitments that we've made to veterans.
I think this is really going to come down, and this goes back to what we've been talking about, but it's going to come down to what is the most important things, what do we absolutely have to get done. What I have seen in the last few years from Congress is that, well, we haven't had a shutdown. So when push comes to shove, and there is one of those hard, hard deadlines, they do hit it. The transportation bill that we just saw get passed this week, that was a hard deadline. We were going to see student loan interest rates go up. We were going to see federal agencies, transportation department agencies shut down. 3,500 people would have been furloughed if that funding was not passed by tomorrow. And they got it done. And they passed it today. House and Senate both passed it today. So it's on its way to the president. So they're going to meet that deadline.
So what I guess then what we're talking about is having the right incentives in place. Obviously, just doing your job is not incentive enough, I suppose.
I think they have to feel like they're going to get blamed. I mean, the interesting thing about this bill, as opposed to the FAA bill, mm-hmm. which actually didn't get passed on time, right. We saw a whole bunch of contracts get put on furlough, a whole bunch of people. I mean, we were actually losing money because they couldn't collect fees. I mean, it's just kind of crazy. And they went through the same thing with the Export-Import Bank ceiling where they said, well, we're gonna, you know, we're not gonna do this, and the Export Import Bank gives $1 billion back to the Treasury. They actually make money, like from foreign companies, and you know, but it's crazy over there. They all seem to want to pretend that they are doing what they think their constituents want, and then when they do that, their constituents come back and say, but we paid you to actually get stuff done.
The first most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Julia Ziegler, is headlined, Congress Running Out of Time to Pass Priority Bills. It's Jason Miller's story on federalnewsradio.com, and it's linked up on the in-depth page of federalnewsradio.com. Josh Soslak's most important federal news story of the week, and I will give just a very brief preview. It's already generated a little bit of conversation, shall we say, here in the studios. We got ready for today's federal news countdown on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose.
Recently, United Healthcare was selected to serve the families in the TRICARE West region, and we want those who we will serve to know more about us. United Healthcare is part of a company of over 115,000 people, serving over 75 million Americans nationwide. Our people work hard to be a trusted healthcare partner for all of our members, and we're proud of our track record of quality service. The American Medical Association ranks us number one in claims processing accuracy among the seven leading commercial health insurers for 2011. J.D. Power & Associates names us number one in its employer satisfaction survey. And Fortune Magazine has named us its most admired health insurer 2 years in a row. As provider for the members of TRICARE West, our people will work every day to put our unmatched provider network, industry-leading innovations, and passion for service to work for you. We are United Healthcare. And for us, the chance to help military families isn't just a job. It's an honor. United Healthcare.
This is a transformative time for the Department of Defense. The military is progressing toward a smaller, nimbler force capable of rapidly responding to any threat around the globe. Secure, next-generation communications capabilities are essential, ensuring personnel can get the information they need from virtually any location, anytime, on any compatible device. Microsoft offers today's military leaders the next wave of technologies, providing advanced security features without compromising productivity and mission effectiveness, all at a price that makes sense. From the front lines to the command center to the Pentagon, Microsoft and its global partner network are working with defense leaders to create solutions that not only meet but anticipate today's service member needs. Whether it's providing secure online collaboration and editing capabilities or voice and video through unified communications, Microsoft is equipping warriors in motion with the familiar technology they use every day to get the job done. That's real impact for tomorrow's military. Learn more about defense IT solutions at Microsoft.com/DOD.
And I can just read on the plane without any problem. Like now, when I'm on the airplane and somebody has a Kindle, they either have to turn on the light because the Kindle doesn't have any light built into it, or they also have these little small lights that clamp onto the side of the Kindle that lights it up because the Kindle is not a backlit screen. On the other hand, when I go to the swimming pool and there's bright sunlight, I cannot use the iPad.
Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected this week by Julia Ziegler and Josh Soslak. And Josh, your number one most important federal news story of the week is a doozy, I will say. It is from The Atlantic, the magazine, and it is headlined, Why Women Still Can't Have It All. And it is written by former State Department official Anne Marie Slaughter. And she writes, I don't normally quote these, but I think this sets it up very fairly. 18 months into my job as the first woman director of policy planning at the State Department, I found myself in New York at the United Nations annual assemblage of every foreign minister and head of state in the world. On a Wednesday evening, President Mrs. Obama hosted a glamorous reception at the American Museum of Natural History. I sipped champagne, greeted foreign dignitaries, and mingled, but I could not stop thinking about my 14-year-old son, who had started eighth grade 3 weeks earlier and was already resuming what had become his pattern of skipping homework, disrupting classes, failing math, and tuning out any adult who tried to reach him. This piece goes on to describe the situation in which she found herself as a State Department official with the demands therein, and trying to raise a family at the same time. And as I mentioned, the title is Why Women Still Can't Have It All. The premise of this piece, that, or at least what I took away from it, was that that is a reasonable and attainable goal, and why so far at least she's been unable to find anyone who's been able to achieve that goal. In your view, as the person who selected this piece, did I get that right or did I mess it up?
No, I think you're right on target with this, and it's a fascinating essay by Amory Slaughter, and it's gotten a lot of press. And I'm going to start right off by saying I'm not qualified, nor do we have enough time to debate whether she's right or Sheryl Sandberg or Nora Ephron or Dana Smith, who wrote a kind of a counterpoint.
The number of refutations of this have been.
I mean, it's all over the press, and there's a lot of good stuff on this. So I can't say that, you know, I can't speak for women, mothers, or you know, folks in this position. But what I can do is say this issue is going to be critically important, not just to, you know, assistant secretaries of state, but to everyone who has kids. Everyone who works with somebody who has kids, everybody who manages somebody who has kids. This is an important story because it's about how we work as a culture. And that, you know, there's some technology pieces of this and there's some cultural pieces of this. But in the end, it's really about, you know, we have a culture where it's changing how we think of what dad's role is and mom's role is in the family. And if we don't do that, if we don't make some choices, and you had said earlier, you know, that it's really about choices. And I agree with you 100%. It's about making those choices and making them not only as a person, as a family unit, but also as a society. Do we want to be the society where we're giving up on some portion of the brilliant people who could be great leaders in our society because to them, their family's really important?
There are two big pieces that I see that I took out of this, Jules, and they seem to be at opposite ends of the spectrum. They seem to be contrary directly to each other. One of them is, it is perfectly reasonable and logical and necessary for an organization to demand the very highest level of performance and attention of the people that it entrusts with the very highest levels of leadership in that organization. An organization needs its chief executive officer to be very hardcore about the leadership of that organization. At the same time, the opposite of that is, so the first point is, have we gone too far about expecting people to be connected all the time? And you've got your BlackBerry on the weekend and you're answering emails at 2 o'clock in the morning and so on. The other issue is, it is unreasonable to expect that level of performance on an ongoing basis because as Ms. Slaughter writes in this piece, it sounds to me like essentially she burned out trying to do all these things all at once. And there are some extraneous reasons also. But the core of what she talks about in this piece is it was just too much. I couldn't do it. I couldn't finish all of the tasks that were presented to me looking at my life holistically.
First of all, I wanted to start by just prefacing this by saying I am a single woman with no kids. And I think that's important going into any conversation like this. So you know where I'm coming from.
I got
from.
One coming home from camp this afternoon, and I have a funny feeling you can have him this weekend.
Right. But I wanted to go back to something that Josh said about culture, because I think this is really important. Now, people, women, men, and by the way, I think that This is a choice that both women and men have to make. And I think that's a very important piece of this. Women and men have to decide what is acceptable for each of them. What can you personally live with? And so now people, men and women, are willing to do this. They are willing to work 15-hour days, you know, whether it's 10 in the office, 12 in the office, and then they go home and they've got 3-4 hours worth of paperwork after they put the kids to bed. I'm not so sure. I question whether the younger generation is going to accept that premise.
These dang kids these days.
And say that this is okay with me. I think that we already think this goes back to what you said about technology, Josh. Younger people look at technology and they say, well, I'm going to use this. Maybe someone can stay at home a day because they're able to telework. Or maybe they don't have to fly to, you know, San Antonio for a meeting because there is video conferencing now that they can use. And I think that the younger generation of workers coming up is going to expect these things and will start to use them at work. And I think that in turn will start to change this culture a little bit.
They can expect them, Josh, but is it reasonable for them to expect them? And is it likely that their expectations will be met? And
well, I honestly don't think they're going to expect them. I think they're going to demand them. And I think that they're going to change the way that we think about
this.
Well,
but I can demand a job in the National Basketball Association, but it's not going to happen. What's the realistic likelihood that these kinds of things will be available for people?
Well, I think they have to be. And I think that we're going to suffer as a nation if we don't make them available. And yeah, you personally can demand something and everybody can look at you, you know, like you have three heads. But when everyone demands something, mm-hmm. it changes. I mean, that's Arab Spring. It changed because not one person, because everybody said
sufficient mass behind something.
Yeah, it's a critical mass. I think that it's really important to look at, you know, the partnership. And there are a lot of single parents out there who are trying to do this on their own. That's really difficult. But in situations where we have two parents, there's some sharing that has to happen and support. I think you see that in a lot of the Counterpunch articles. You know, giving up, staying home doesn't mean you give up your career. I'll give you one data point on that. Ted Koppel, a guy who we generally assume is pretty successful in his business,
yeah.
He stayed home with his kids while his wife worked as an attorney for, I think, 4 or 5 years. Did not seem to hurt his career.
No, he seemed to turn out okay.
Yeah, I think he's doing okay.
Your most important federal news story of the week, Josh, is the Atlantic piece by Anne-Marie Slaughter, Why Women Still Can't Have It All. You can find it and all of our stories on the countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Julia Ziegler of Federal News Radio, great to see you on the countdown this week. Josh, always good to have you on as well. Thank you both for being here today. Hour number 2 of In-Depth with Francis Rose next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.